Mr. Kreese will no longer be joining us. I made a promise when I became your sensei to always look out for your best interests. Despite how hard this may be for all of us, he didn't have our best interests at heart. John Kreese may have founded Cobra Kai, but he no longer represents what this dojo stands for. His Cobra Kai was old and outdated. You refuse to move forward. What happens when we do that, Mr. Diaz?
You get stuck like cement.
Exactly. To be a great fighter, you gotta learn to adapt. There's Creed on the wall. Follow it to the letter. It'll make you strong. It'll make you formidable. It will also make you an asshole. Because that's just black paint on a white wall. But life's not black and white. More often than not, it's gray. And it's in those gray areas where Johnny Lawrence's Cobra Kai sometimes shows mercy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
I'm Richard.
And I'm Rima.
This is House Podcastica Cobra Kai Edition.
This week, we're covering Cobra Kai Season 2, Episodes 7 and 8, titled Lull and Glory of Love.
So, it feels very apocalyptic right now. We were just talking about how where Richard and I are in California, we kind of just had one long night. Like, there's so much smoke up in the upper atmosphere that the sun didn't really poke through, so it was like nighttime all day.
Yeah, it's like a nuclear winter, raining ash.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Not to mention all the hundreds of other crazy things that have happened this year. But another crazy thing happened today, and that was that they announced that The Walking Dead is wrapping up after next season.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So they're just like, let's just get all the bad news out of the way.
Add that to the list.
No, actually, I'm kind of glad. I mean, it's been on for a long time, and it'll be cool for them to have an ending to work to. And actually, the show's pretty good right now, but it's been on for so long, and I don't know. I think this will be good. So, it's season 11 is going to actually play out over 2 years. So it starts, I think, at the end of next year, and it'll wrap up by 2022. And then just because they can't quite bring themselves to fully end it, they're going to have a spinoff featuring Carol and Daryl.
Mm.
And they're having a second spinoff. It's an anthology series, Tales of the Walking Dead, that'll have stories of different characters every week. So,
wow. Hey, we talked about that on this podcast about spinoffs. How do you feel about those?
The Walking Dead ones have been uneven, but lately, well, there's only been one, Fear the Walking Dead, and it's been pretty crappy. And there's another one getting ready to come out in October, so we'll see. But yeah, we kind of, Reman brought it up when you mentioned that Cobra Kai was thinking about doing a bunch of spinoffs. So far, I think it probably would have been better if they hadn't done any for Walking Dead.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
I wanted to bring that up. I know it doesn't have anything to do with Cobra Kai, but this is House Podcastica, and you know, we all started around the Walking Dead cast, and so I just found out about it today, and I thought it was a pretty big deal. You know, we've been podcasting on the show, well, I have, for 10 years, and so this will be the end of an era.
Sure, yeah. It's your bread and butter, man.
Yep.
Enjoy it while you still got it, huh?
Yeah. Well, we'll figure out something else to do. Cover all these dumb spinoffs.
We always got The Mandalorian.
That's right. And we got Cobra Kai. And this week, it's our top three highlights for Cobra Kai Season 2, Episodes 7 and 8, Lull and Glory of Love. What did you guys think of these two?
I liked them. I think Well, did I like them? I don't know. I'm going to have to, like, talk it out with you guys because, you know, like, I labeled the second episode, the Glory of Love, episode 8. I was like, this is the makeout episode. Jesus Christ, everybody's sucking face in this show. Not sure. Yeah. Not sure really how that's going to affect future, you know, arcs and plots and stuff like that. So I was a little like, I don't know.
So every time somebody kissed, you're like, this could ruin everything.
Yeah. It's exactly kind of what I was thinking. I was like, hey, we were headed down the warpath. This was getting cool. And now it's like all of a sudden everyone's finding partners and love and that ruins everything.
Playing hiding the plantain.
It was a little bit like they plopped an episode of The Love Boat in there.
Yeah. That's right.
What about you, Rima?
I think overall I liked them. I wasn't over the top in love with them, but I thought they were pretty good episodes. Probably the second episode I liked a little more than episode 7. Because I think mostly, you know, a lot of the 80s stuff, which always gets me, throw in some 80s stuff and hey, I'm a happy girl. Mm-hmm. But I think I like that one a little bit more. I could have done, like Rich said, I could have done with a little less sucking face, but whatever. There are a lot of kids in the show, teenagers, and that's what they do, and sneaking around, you know, making out and stuff. So it's whatever. I can live with it. But it was like, okay, cut. That's enough.
So. Moving on.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I feel the same way. I think I liked the second one a little better. I actually liked them both. And as has been the case lately, I like these better now than I did when I first watched them. I'm noticing more things that sort of feel like they're tying things together and deepening things in a way that makes it more satisfying. I think before too, I was like, why are you moving away from Daniel and Johnny? That's what I really want to see. I mean, there was Daniel and Johnny stuff too, but I don't know. I liked them. I'm liking this season. I like these two episodes. So let's get into our top three. Rich?
You know, I'm going to go with the little thing with Kreese. You know, like Johnny kicking Kreese to the curb, so to speak. I like how it kind of happened over the two episodes, too. We begin with Kreese at the beginning of episode 7, and he's like, on the sacred ground of Miyagi-Do. Man, when I saw that, like, I had instant feelings of disgust and anger. I was like, you get out of there.
And he made fun of it like it was a garden.
Yeah. And he was smoking a cigar.
Yeah. And he puts the cigar out and says regards to Miyagi. I think that's the first time Kreese has ever been there.
Right. And he looked like the devil. I mean, he looked out of place and Daniel looked a little traumatized. He had that look on his face.
What are you doing here?
Yeah. And then, you know, as the episodes continue, Johnny finally mans up and kicks Kreese out of the dojo. And you know, Kreese tried to make an argument, but we've discussed this several times. It's foundationally weak, you know. And I thought, oh, then later on, I thought Johnny did a good job at explaining why Kreese was no longer part of the JoJo, you know, referencing the slogan, now strike first, strike hard, and then show some mercy sometimes. kind of changed a little bit, you know, but it's more important to use your head than your fists. So I enjoyed that message, and I thought, you know, that was a pretty good way to end that. But is it the end? Do you think you think we're going to see Kreese anymore? I can't remember.
Well, I kind of remember, so I don't want to say, but oh. I do think it's pretty fishy when
he leaves awful like quiet.
Getting into all his business while he's gone. Yeah, I reorganized everything. Yeah. I'm like, what'd you do in there?
Right, yeah. Plus, so. I think that leads credence to what Rima has said before, too, is that he's aiming to take over the joint.
Yeah, and, mm-hmm. and also, he, you know, what was the point of Kreese? He came in, he's, you know, trying to tell Johnny that he's sorry and wants to become a new man. But then as soon as Johnny goes away, he starts teaching him total brutality. And, you know, he filters his whole experience of the world through war and your enemy's not honorable. So neither should you be and all this stuff. And it started to work. I mean, it just took a few days and suddenly Miguel's fucking brutal as hell. and then he gets kicked out, and I'm like, that feels a bit anticlimactic, you know, for him, for that to have been it for him. I don't know, maybe not, but
yeah, I thought like the same. It was like, wow, that was a little bit of a, you know, because his entrance there in the finale of season one, when he comes in, it was like, so you know, and then for him
happen?
And then him leaving, it was kind of like, oh, that kind of fizzled a little bit. So, and it was, I was like, he's leaving like really quiet, like he's not even putting up a fight, which seems a little uncharacteristic of him. But I was glad to see him go, but I don't know, I think they had him in there for a number of reasons. One, just because he's a part of the Karate Kid like legacy. He's a big part of who Johnny is and how he, you know, like who he is today. And I think just showing a lot of growth with him and his character and how he really does want to change, and how I think Kreese being in his life is a big reminder of like, wow, I don't want to be like that. And I do want to be a better person. And I want these kids to be better than me. It's like he had the whole conversation with his buddies in the previous episode during the bike trip. And, you know, I think that had a big impact on him, and talking about, you know, he lost his buddy and, you know, he was still a young guy. And I think that hit him really hard, you know, kind of the time that you have left, you know, on this earth and what he wants to do with it. I think that's kind of a little bit for me how Kreese served his purpose on the show a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, that was just a nudge in the direction of life is short. I'm not going to put up with any bullshit. And, but I think they're going to, in the next final two episodes, the All Valley Championship is going to change from under 18 to under 75, and Kreese is going to enter the tournament.
The dude still got it. I mean, he might be geriatric, but the dude's got a hell of a kick. So.
But
under 75, anybody can join, right?
Not my grandpa. But his speech to the class. Well, Johnny's speech to Kreese, where he says, you know, this is my dojo, and Kreese is like, your dojo? You forgot who started Cobra Kai. Like, I've been waiting for him to say that. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I haven't forgotten anything. You know what? I'm sorry. I thought this could work, but I was wrong. We're done. I don't ever want to see you in this dojo again. That was just really powerful. Like, in this dojo is this phrase, you know, fear does not exist in this dojo. So for him to say, I don't ever want to see you in this dojo again, that was good. But then when he's talking to his students and he says, you know, I always made a promise to look out for your best interest, and Kreese didn't have your best interest at heart. And then he says this creed on the wall, and it's strike first, strike hard, no mercy. Follow it to the letter. It'll make you strong. It'll make you formidable. It will also make you an asshole. And I thought that was really powerful. And I thought he was going to somehow, you know, rationalize again why this, you know, this is my version of this, not Kreese's, but no, he was just like, no, this is wrong. And then he said, yeah, think with your head. And oh yeah, he said, but life's not black and white. More often than not, it's gray. And it's in those gray areas where Johnny Lawrence's Cobra Kai sometimes shows mercy. And I like that because it's like the theme of the show is all about how the original Karate Kid movies were very black and white, but this is all about people's gray area, you know, spaces. And even though Johnny doesn't really live up to that all the time, he just punched the shit out of Anoush the other day, but still,
right.
It's, you know, he's trying. So I loved all that.
Yeah. He still has some,
that's what makes it appealing, is that he knows what should be done. He's just not good at doing it.
Yeah. His instincts go against it. He's had a lot of training to overcome.
Yeah, he has. I think it was kind of interesting because I think in a way with, you know, Kreese was like you said, Jason, when he was like reminding Johnny, you know, like, you forget who started this dojo. You know, I think that is one way he was trying to kind of reestablish his territory. And I really do think it was his intent to try and weasel his way in and gain the kids' trust and undermine Johnny and somehow take it away from him. And him leaving and Johnny kicking him out, you know, the whole snake theme, it felt like a little bit like Cobra Kai shedding its skin when Kreese left, and like a, you know, a new Cobra Kai emerges with Johnny, you know, kind of reforming the motto of, you know, strike first, strike hard, and no mercy, and kind of modifying it to his, what he thinks should be the right way. And that's
bringing honor to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he always says it's still a requirement to be badass. Like he said that a couple of times.
Well, you can't be a pussy. Yeah. Come on. I mean,
right,
you can.
Right. Exactly. Maybe that he'll replace. It'll be strike first, strike hard. Don't be a pussy.
Right.
Most of the time.
Right. So, Grima, what's your number three?
Well, my number three was also The Little Goodbye to Crease, but since we kind of already talked about that, I'll just kind of talk about one of my notes was the part about Robbie, in my exact words, being a little twerp, lying about Miguel returning the Medal of Honor. He did not certainly earn that Medal of Honor with how he, you know, decided to lie and not tell Samantha, you know, that he returned it. And, you know, how it came to be and he just leaves it lying there on a rock, like so obvious, you know, in the backyard of Miyagi-Do and it just happens to be found. I didn't like that.
Yeah, and it was great of Miguel to bring it there. Like, as brutal as Miguel is, I like that he didn't approve of what Hawk did, mm-hmm. you know, and he gave him shit mm-hmm. about it and he took the medal back. And he's also the one I feel like that's most trying to make peace among him, Tori, Samantha, and Robbie. Miguel's the one who's trying to make peace.
Yeah.
And so that was nice. But yeah, Robbie, I mean, we were giving Robbie props last time for showing restraint and not being with Samantha. And now he, you know, fucked up with the medal and also with Samantha. So I think that the show, like any soap opera, which this kind of is, if a character gets too good, they have to have them do dumb stuff like this to
make
dramatic. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, and it goes along again with the theme of the show that you were just talking about. And I, again, big theme of the show is, you know, life is pretty gray. It's not always black and white. And, you know, Robbie's a good kid. I mean, he's, I think, all in all, a pretty good kid. And I think he does try to do good. You know, he does do really well encouraging the other members of Miyagi-Do. And, you know, Sam seems to like him. And, you know, he seems to try to make up kind of for his little shady past when he used to hang out with those, you know, kids that stole things all the time. But so, I mean, it's another just little imperfect moment he had.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about Samantha.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just doesn't want her to know that Miguel did a nice thing because he wants her for himself.
I say, what current boyfriend is going to make the ex-boyfriend look good? I mean.
Yeah, I mean, but. I wouldn't do that though. I'd be like, Miguel brought this over. I don't know.
You don't want your
jerk ex boyfriend brought this back.
He's trying to get back in with you. It's so transparent because that is kind of the truth. I don't think Miguel. I think that is part of the reason why Miguel. I mean, Hawk accuses him of it too. Oh, you just care about Samantha. I think that is a huge part of why he did that. To try to get back in her good graces.
Oh, totally. And I think that's exactly why Robbie was like, nah, not going to tell him about that. I'm not going to tell her you did a good thing or a good deed or whatever and make her look good to you again. She's with me now.
Right.
It's just, to me, a 15 or 16-year-old boy move.
Yeah, well, you're not thinking 100% with your brain when you're that age.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, let's see. What if... You were 18 years old, rich, and I'm trying to think how this would work. Somebody stole something from Lucy, and then Eli brought it to the theater to give to her. Would you tell her Eli brought it?
No, oh, no way. I mean, not Eli. Maybe Eric Ortega, I'd be like, yeah, jump on that bandwagon, but yeah. Hey, it has a lot to do with, situation. There's very little forethought at that age.
I mean, I just don't like the idea of just excusing something like that just because of what age he is. I think it was pretty messed up of Robbie to do that.
Well, throw a little shade on Sam too. I mean, she's not making it easy for him. She's kind of throwing herself at him, man. He was kept trying to be like,
maybe we should. I'm saying the Medal of Honor part where he pretended he didn't know where it came from or whatever. I don't care if he's only 16. I don't think it's cool. I think we can give teenagers more credit than that. That if you're a good kid, you'll tell the truth.
If it gains you something.
Okay. Okay. Anything else, Rima, on that one?
No.
All right. I'm going to go into callbacks first, right off the bat. So first callbacks from the movies. Kreese, you know, first time he's been to Miyagi's home. The last time Kreese confronted Daniel alone, I mean, Terry Silver was there, but it was in Karate Kid 3, and then Miyagi showed up and kicked his ass. Now, Daniel, I mean, he's, I don't know, is he formidable enough to fight Kreese? I bet you Kreese would still win. What do you guys think?
Gosh, that's a good question. Kreese is dirty. I think he'd do something dirty.
Yeah, I feel
maybe
like
he'd get the upper hand.
For sure.
Yeah. But Daniel didn't seem too scared. I mean, he seemed angry, which sometimes is a response to fear. But I think he would have fought if he had to. Would have tried. Laura's when he was a little kid. No way.
Yeah.
Anyway. Robbie, I figured this out, probably would have been better to say it last time, but Robbie staying in Daniel's guest house is, I think, kind of a reflection of Daniel staying with Miyagi in Miyagi's guest house. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of an echo there. In this episode, Daniel's mom says, I even bought you the Minute Maid because I know you hate the fancy stuff. She mentions Minute Maid in Karate Kid when he's got his, or no, he does, when he's got his black eye and he won't show her, he take off his sunglasses and she says, are you on something? And he goes, yeah, I'm on Minute Maid. That's what I'm on. So that's consistent. He's like Minute Maid from back then. Daniel has all his students waxing all the cars at the dealership. That's a callback. Daniel's looking through his scrapbook. He sees postcards on one page from Japan and is like boarding pass and stuff. But the picture is Daniel and Miyagi, and he has this big orange jacket on. So that seems like it's from Karate Kid 3 in, you know, near the Devil's Punch Bowl or whatever it was. What was it called? The Devil's Basin?
Punch Bowl.
There is a thing called the Devil's Punch Bowl up there. Then there's another page where Daniel's with the little kid and on his shoulders and it says my trip to Maui. I assume that's Samantha. And there's Anthony's first Christmas. There's LaRusso's Grand Auto opening in 2002. So just some historical things. Let's see. Johnny, he's just been through a quick string of Tinder dates that didn't really go anywhere. And then he accidentally sends a Facebook message to Allie.
Oh my God.
It wasn't too bad
in the next season.
I know. Yeah, that's totally setting this up in the hopes that it happens kind of move on the show's part, I would say.
I know. I hadn't realized until we started doing this podcast at how many references. It's like at least one every episode Allie makes some sort of an appearance, and it's like, how could you do that and then have her not show up season 3? How are they going to write themselves out of that?
I know. I mean, they could just not follow up on it, but it's pretty clear that if she's not already signed up, that the writers really want her.
Yeah, man. She could probably make a lot of money.
I know. You guys really want me, don't you?
Give me what I want. I'll show up.
The title of the second episode we watched, Glory of Love, that's that breakout song by Peter Cetera from Karate Kid 2, of course. It's a callback. In the skating rink, Tori comes up behind Samantha and just kind of rams into her. And then Sam hits her back and the security guy just sees Sam hitting her and says, all right, you're done. You're out. And Robbie's like, she's the one who started it. And he goes, you're out. That's, I think, taken right from Karate Kid when Daniel's playing soccer for PE and the Cobra Kai, one of the guys trips him. And he gets up and starts punching him. They're like, look what he's doing to Bobby, coach. And
Bobby says, that's right.
None of that on this team. Hey, he hooked me. I said, out of here. This school sucks. That's a reflection. Some callbacks to the show earlier in the show. Johnny says to to Miguel and the whole class, Kreese's Cobra Kai was old and outdated. He refused to move forward. And what happens when you do that, Mr. Diaz? He goes, you get stuck like cement. Exactly. That's from the cement truck exercise from the first episode.
Right.
And then when Johnny says to Miguel, you know, I know you guys are dating, just don't get distracted. You can play hide the plantain on your own time. That's from when he had plantains at Miguel's house.
In English, they're called bananas.
Yeah, that's right. And then let's see, some callbacks. Actually, this one, when Kreese says, you know, we're doing this exercise in the at the creek or whatever it was, Coyote Creek, Johnny says, I'm not sure they're ready for that. That makes me think that Cobra Kai did that same exercise when Johnny was a student.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even though we never saw it. And then just sort of cultural callbacks. There's the 80s night at the skate rink where they're totally playing to the nostalgia of half the audience of this show, which I love.
Yeah.
You mentioned that, Rima. Did you have a point on it?
I did. Yep.
Why don't you, do you want to talk about it so I don't step on it?
Oh, well, that's okay. I mean, you can wrap what you have to say. It's totally fine.
You go ahead.
Well, I mean,
what did you like about it?
Well, I mean, it's short and sweet, but it definitely, I felt right at home in that scene, yeah. You know, seeing all the kids in their 80s getup. Now, some of them, of course, because they're in costume, some were a little over the top, but, you know, we all didn't walk around looking like that. Well, you guys know you were there too, but, you know, you didn't walk around like that all the time. And, but it was definitely like home for me, seeing the big hair and some of the outfits and, you know, how the guys dress. Like, you know, Robbie had his, I know he wasn't Don Johnson, or it, as he said, Dan Johnson, which I just wanted to, I was like, oh man,
it's so funny.
Ugh, the kids these days, I'm telling you, no respect. I know he was
supposed
to be...
hey, he's on Watchmen. Don't you watch TV?
Come on. So I know he was supposed to be like James Spader, and I think he pulled that off pretty well. But that's basically how a lot of the guys dress, or at least one style anyway. So
yeah, I dress like Kirk Cameron because people said I looked like him. So
yeah,
I started
totally
taking fashion tips from him.
Totally. So yeah, that was definitely a big style for the guys. And then seeing Tori dress in her Madonna get up definitely took me back. I had all the Madonna gear in the day, so that definitely took me back. I used to definitely deck myself out in my coolest Madonna outfits going to the skating rink, and just growing up at the skating rink. Mm-hmm. If I wasn't at the movies, I was at the skating rink, you know, as a
right
kid.
On.
So that's
lots, you know, of black, right? With those, you get like 30 of those ring bracelets or whatever, those plastic.
Yeah, the rubber plastic bracelets.
Rubber, yeah.
Yeah, I had them lined up both arms and had some
your fluorescent leg warmers. Yeah.
I didn't have a lot of fluorescent. That was one thing in the 80s I wasn't into that much. I know that was a big thing with Madonna, but I wasn't into the neon or the fluorescent that much.
The black, the dark phase, right?
But yeah. But the black and the rubber bracelets with the, you know, I had a spiky bracelet too, and just the hair and all of that. And so, yeah, if I wasn't at the skating rink, I was at the movies. I was a latchkey kid. My mom was a single parent. She just kind of dropped me off for hours at a time. Definitely took me back, you know, kind of seeing all of that and hearing the music and seeing the kids decked out, a little nostalgic for sure.
Right. I remember I had at that age, I had a salmon-colored double-breasted suit and pants with a black shirt and a white tie.
Pictures, or it didn't exist.
Right.
We gotta see some pictures. That's awesome.
I had a salmon-colored suit too, except I had white pants and a salmon jacket.
Oh, maybe we shared it.
Maybe.
Yeah, see pictures, guys.
Yeah, I liked the music. Dance Hall Days by Wang Chung and If You Leave by OMD, one of my favorites.
Yeah.
When they played that song, I was like Rima, I was watching this roller rink sing, and I'm like, oh, this is cute and fuzzy. Everybody's having fun. 80s party, pretty in pink, blah, blah, blah. And then the song came on, If You Leave by OMD, and it like totally triggered a flood of memories for me.
Yeah.
I was like,
flood
whoa.
Of emotions.
Suddenly remembered going to Roller King, which was our roller rink here. And then, you know, high school dances, putt-putt golf, bowling. We had a road that we used to party on called Lit Road. And
oh, yeah.
Oh, man. All you can eat buffet at King's Table. Oh, that was great.
Yeah, there was this road because we're from Modesto, which is kind of a commuter town, but on the edges, it's all country. So you go out on this dirt road and every weekend, somehow there'd be a keg out there.
Yeah.
We'd go out there.
That happened here too on occasion.
And I remember one night Rich being like, I'm not even drinking.
That's funny. Gosh, now I want to have an 80s party, get a bunch of friends of like the same age. And when it's like, I guess, safe again or makes sense, have a 80s party. I guess maybe a virtual 80s party.
Yeah, I can be Kirk Cameron again. I can be current Kirk Cameron and tell everyone they're going to go to hell and burn forever. So a little bit more on that. Miguel, I love this. It was kind of subtle, but he's like, can I borrow your jacket? And he borrows Johnny's jacket for 80s night. And it kind of looks like a Michael Jackson-y kind of a thing. But I went back to the scene in Karate Kid, and it's the same jacket he's wearing when he's on his motorcycle with the same Cobra Kai patch and everything. So that was cool. Have an 80s night, borrow the jacket from the guy who's stuck in the 80s.
Yeah, just raid Johnny's wardrobe, man. He's right. He's got all the gear.
Authentic.
I love what he said. I'm skipping around a little bit when he's like, I know when I need to help you with your wardrobe. And he goes, I don't think I need that or whatever. And he's like, I'm thinking a button down shirt and some distressed jeans. Do you have that? And he goes, if you mean old jeans, yeah.
I think he probably does. I think all of his old jeans are distressed. They're just still from like the 80s and 90s.
Back in the 80s, they had like stonewashed. Just a couple other points. I think Robbie looks way better with Spader hair than He-Man hair, actually.
Yes. Big improvement.
Yeah, totally. And then I guess Sam is dressed up like, is she dressed up like Molly Ringwald?
Sam, that's what I was thinking.
I think she's supposed to.
I don't think I saw Pretty in Pink, so I don't remember. But she kept talking about, she says, you're a ducky in Spader clothing, which I know means you're hot, but you're also nice. Because John Cryer was supposed to end up with Molly Ringwald in Pretty in Pink. And the test screening audiences didn't like it, so they changed the ending so that, was it James Spader? No, it was the other guy, Andrew, whatever his name was.
Andrew McCarthy?
Yeah, right? Was he in Pretty in Pink? You guys haven't seen it either, have you? Because you're not answering any of my questions.
I'm trying to remember.
That was one. I was all in on like Breakfast Club and 16 Candles. I didn't see Pretty in Pink. I guess I got to revoke my 80s card. 80s kid card for not seeing it, but I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah, they all kind of run together, to be honest with you.
Okay, let's see. Where are we? I think we're at Richard for number two.
Number two? Yeah, it was mostly about the roller rink. I thought that was a fun, cute scene. And all the 80s callbacks was pretty cool, too. I'm trying to find something else to say, but I think we covered most of it.
All right.
When was the last time you guys went roller skating? Gosh, I can't even remember.
I went a few years ago. One of my good friends, she was in middle school at the time. She's in high school now, but she was in middle school and she had a birthday party. And she said, hey, you should come to the party. We're all just going to, you know, hang out and have pizza at the skating rink. And I was like, I'm totally in. Hell yeah. Strapped them skates on and we got out there and had to request some good music. They were playing some awful music. And so, of course, I went and requested some good stuff that we could skate to. But yeah, it was a few years. I felt it the next day for sure.
No kidding.
We would roller skate in the 80s, and then in the 90s, the big fad was inline skates.
Right. And rollerblades.
Rollerblades, yeah. And me and Eric and Barlin, I can't remember if you did with us, but we used to skate a lot. Got pretty good at it.
Yeah, downtown.
Outside. Yeah. And in the park and stuff. I mean, I still have scars when I fell. And then when I went off to college, I used to skate around campus a lot. But I haven't, I mean, I've done some ice skating more in recent years. And every time I do, my ankles kill me. Because if you don't do that on the regular and you're older, it's hard.
I never got good enough to skate backwards. I was always disappointed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I wasn't so great at it either. As much time as I spent there, I never got very good at skating backwards. So I could go forward pretty good, though. Get around them curves, kind of lean into it a little bit.
I could do it. I remember when I first learned, it's kind of like in snowboarding when you finally fucking figure out how to turn. It's like, holy shit, I can do something new right now.
Ties it all together.
Yeah. Okay. Rima, what's your number two?
My number two, I wanted to talk a little bit about Johnny's dream sequence with Miguel's mom.
Talk about wet dreams.
Now, I probably think it's a little bit more interesting than maybe what the fellas might think of that. She's certainly a hot woman, so I'll give her that. But I thought it was, you know, just a really fun, you know, kind of how Johnny imagines, you know, a woman of his dreams and, you know, them having like this karate kind of duo, and she overpowers him, and then, you know, she's pouring beer on herself, and, you know, then pouring it in Johnny's mouth, and it's just funny to kind of see an insight into Johnny's mind as
cheap
to what
beer.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Still, it's still, yeah, he's, you know, he might be dreaming, but it's still cheap practical beer. So it was interesting.
I think he was in his gi for a second there, but it was like one of those white ones.
Yeah.
With no sleeves.
She was in the black one. So she was being...
Oh, was she?
Yeah, okay, she was in the black
she's
one.
She's the bad girl.
Yeah, she's the bad girl and has, of course, some, you know, cute lingerie underneath it. Mm. So it was just kind of fun. And of course, you know, the White Snake song playing, you know, was...
Here I go
perfectly
again.
In tune, you know, although I was a little worried when you realize then it shows him in bed and he's dreaming. I was a little bit worried about that when they pulled the camera back, what might actually be happening.
And then he goes like when that started, he was in front of her door, like the moment was, you know, pregnant with possibility. And then he has the dream and then he goes right over there and it's the same
yeah,
sort of feeling. And then she walks up with some other guy. Wah, wah.
Yeah. He did not strike first this time.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And I remember when I first saw that, I thought, ah, shit, he's got no chance. So it was kind of cool that it came around by the end of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fun. But it was just a fun little insight into what, like Johnny's dreams of a hot chick or like an 80s video back in the day on MTV.
What do you think of that, Rich?
Even his dreams are stuck in the 80s.
Yeah.
Poor guy, man.
It was like a White Snake video.
Tawny Katane doing cartwheels on the cars.
And I tried to, shoot, I should have looked harder. I wanted to find an interview with that actress so she could talk about what it was like doing it, but I couldn't find one.
I bet it was fun.
I bet
I would.
She
totally
seemed to have
it.
Fun with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Coors Light always makes me laugh, too. Mm-hmm. And then later on in the bar, he meets that hot chick after all his failed dates, and she's drinking Coors Light. And then he's like, oh,
She's the perfect woman.
I gotta go. Woman. Yeah. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You didn't have to say you had to go. Just tell her you'd be right back, you dork.
Yeah. Yeah. Get her fucking number, you dumbass. I know. I felt so bad for her. She bumps into him just like he said that's the way he used to do. And she's like perfect. She's cute. She likes the same things he likes. And that's the whole point that sometimes, you know, or what do they say? You got to follow your heart, or that's what somebody said at some point in this. You can't deny your heart. So I think that's one of the themes of this episode. But he should have, I mean, I always feel bad when people are rude to other people. So he should have at least said, you know what? I'm sorry. I realize I'm not in a position to be doing this. I didn't mean to mislead you or something, but that would have been boring, I guess.
Right.
He's just like, I gotta go.
He makes his own fate.
Yeah. He's in love with Carmen. Well, let's see. My number two is romance and love. And there was a lot of it.
Yeah.
Johnny's dream was great. Johnny, I thought it was awesome that Miguel gets Johnny on Tinder. What kind of women are you looking to meet? Oh, wait, super hot babes. Dumb question. What do you like? I like muscle cars, martial arts, and Iron Eagle. And Iron Eagle, too.
Yeah. I realized he said that, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm Johnny Lawrence. I like the exact same things.
Same things.
And caveman. And, he likes caveman, too.
Yeah. He's like, that's another like. Or no, he goes, it used to be easy to find a girl at a bar, just bump into her hard, but not too hard, then buy her a beer and make up for it. Miguel's like, no. And he goes, tried and true, Diaz. That's how the cavemen did it. Cavemen. That's another like, you know, like those in those insurance commercials. But Iron Eagle, I read that the guy who played Tommy, Rob Garrison, he was actually in that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
He was. Yeah.
Then he's on Tinder. This is dumb. You can't find anything about a chick from... Ooh, this one's hot.
What else do you need to know?
Yeah. And then his dates are pretty funny. That really cute girl who's like, oh, yeah, I just need... It's hard to find someone who knows how to handle kids. He's like, oh, I'm around kids all the time. One of my students was texting, so I body slammed into the mat and pounded my elbow into his teeth. And then he finds that girl, what ditches her, and that guy is like, he just happens to run into that guy who was dating Carmen, who's like, she's good for a few bangs and then I'll drop her. That was a bit of a coincidence.
Yeah. That ruined his whole night.
Yeah. So he had to go out and kick his ass. And then he's like, you're lucky I'm showing mercy. This is mercy. But then I really like the end of that whole arc where he, you know, goes back to Carmen and she's been stood up and he's like, oh, just forget about that guy. You know, he's a loser. Anybody would be lucky to go on a date with you. She's like, you asking me out? What if I am? And that was another moment. There's been a few moments where there's like something romantic happening between two characters and they do this great build up music that adds to it. So like, I'm kind of feeling the excitement of it too. I'm going to play a little clip here.
Forget about him. You don't deserve a loser like that. You deserve a guy who at least shows up. Anybody'd be lucky to go on a date with you.
You asking me out?
What if I am?
And they lived happily ever after.
Yeah. If the series just ended right there. I have a vague recollection of a date coming up between them that I think was really funny. So I'm looking forward to that.
Ah, that'd be cool. Well, he did ask.
And then last on the romance thing, Amanda and Daniel, it's a bit heavy. Like, wow, their marriage is in trouble. Like, this is pretty serious. It's a tough situation. Like I identify with Daniel here. He's bored with his job, it seems like, and he finds this passion that he wants to follow and it takes up a lot of his time. And for me, that's podcasting. And so my solution was to just quit my job. But anyways, he just blows off his wife and, you know, he told her he would be there for that lunch, blows her off. That's a dick move. And he keeps doing it over. Oh, I promise I'll be better. And so I don't blame her for being upset about it. But I also felt like, you know, in the end, she says, I don't want you to have to give it up, when he's saying, I've missed Mr. Miyagi. And this makes me feel like, you know, he's with me. And she's like, I don't want you to have to give it up. But she never said anything like that up until that moment. And she was just saying, you know, like, sometimes you focus on what's most important to you, right? And she's just like, seems like she's about ready to just divorce him. And I was like wishing she would offer a compromise or something, you know? But I guess she's just feeling like he doesn't give a shit about her anymore. And well, the whole moment with Daniel and his mother, I really liked that part when she was talking about the story at Coney Island. And I especially liked the actress, I forgot her name, but her delivery of it. Because when you read the script, it doesn't sound that momentous. It's like we were waiting in line on the Wonder Wheel just us, and Dad held my hand and he put his hand on my shoulder right here and he told me he loved me. I could still feel his hair on my cheek. That's all I ever wanted to know, that he was in it with me. But I'm going to play that scene just so you can tell how great her delivery was to make it really poignant. At least I thought so.
You know what I remember?
What do you call it?
The Wonder Wheel. Oh, that's right. What it was.
Yeah, my God, that amazing view.
No. The line. That's what I remember. It wasn't the lights. It wasn't the ride. It was the smallest moment. We were waiting in line on the Wonder Wheel. And just us. And Dad held my hand, and he put his head on my shoulder, right here. And he told me he loved me. I could still feel his hair on my cheek. That's all I ever wanted to know, that he was in it with me, no matter what. I love you.
Love you, Mom.
I get choked up.
That's all I want to know, too. She delivered that whole scene just beautifully. I mean, if you didn't get choked up and really feel that, I mean, check your pulse. Yeah. So yeah.
I think she must have been thinking about somebody in her own life. I mean, you know, good actors figure it out, but I think a lot of times that's how they do it. I don't know, but yeah, that was really moving. I thought, as I was watching that whole episode though, I was like, I wonder if Rich is just gonna think this is super boring.
I'm sorry, what are we talking about?
That episode should have been called Lull.
Lull, yeah, I was thinking that too. And I think that was the key. Like, she showed Daniel, she just wants to know that you're in it with her. And maybe once Daniel sort of felt into that and made Amanda feel it too, that's when she could open up and be like, okay, well, I don't want you to have to give up the dojo either. But she just needs to feel that he still cares about her, basically. And so he showed her that by, you know, recreating that night when they first got the auto dealership together, which is significant because that's something that they're in together and she wants to feel like they're in it together. So anyway, I love all that. I do wonder, well, okay, did you really solve anything? Like, he still wants to do the karate, right? Like, we need that for the show.
He's got to find the
I got a little nervous too when Amanda said that all his efforts up to that point were like putting a bandage on an open head wound. I'm like, ouch. I don't know if that was actually an analogy or not, but I started thinking, ooh, because at this point, right, Johnny's still looking for love. And I'm like, what if Johnny swept in and took Amanda?
No, I'd be like, no.
How funny would it have been if he's swiping through Tinder and sees Amanda?
Oh, God, that would be a sharp left turn. Yeah, Johnny steals Amanda away, and then Allie comes to town, and Daniel and Allie get back together. Oh, Johnny's like, God damn it.
Now we're talking 80s soap operas.
Now we're talking knives and guns.
And then, okay, so then all on the romance thing, there's also this Samantha and Robbie and Miguel and Tori. And I really like the talk between Moon and Samantha, because Moon is just such a nice friend. You know, she just gazed right into Samantha's eyes very openly and just such a supportive friend. And that was nice. And she said, my mom's therapist always says you can't hide from your heart. That's what it was. So maybe that's similar to why Johnny decided to go back for Carmen.
Yeah, I wrote a note down too. It's good to see that Sam still has a friend. She hasn't been too fortunate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, she's kind of her own making sometimes. But then, you know, Robbie, last time we were all like, good job, Robbie. And now he's just kissing Samantha. I'm like, what changed? You know, your hormones finally got to you. But I think that was it, but a switch you could tell flip for him when they were fighting in the freezer and they kind of locked together and you could tell something happened there and Daniel doesn't notice it. He's like, good.
Yeah. He's thinking this one's a keeper.
So I was wondering when you and Lucy were watching this, since she was happy that Robbie said no before, what was she saying when they were like constantly making out and stuff?
Lucy was upset. She kept hiding behind a pillow. She didn't want to watch the show. She was like, no, stop making these stupid decisions. Oh my God, Daniel's going to kick him out. Daniel's going to kick him out.
Does take quite some balls for them to be doing that right under Daniel's nose.
I know.
And then what else? So Miguel, as I said, you know, they all come together at the skating rink. Miguel seems to be the one most trying to make peace. He compliments Robbie and Sam's costumes. He tries to introduce Sam and Robbie to Tori. And when he says Tori's in Cobra Kai, Sam goes, figures. So she's being snotty. And then Tori like gives Miguel an extra long kiss to sort of claim her territory, which that's okay. But then Robbie's just sort of quiet the whole time, I guess. But then later when Miguel's alone with Samantha, he tries to smooth things over again. Look, about Tori. And she goes, I can't believe he'd be with a girl like that. Well, you don't even know her. I know enough. So she's just like her dad, you know, she's in Cobra Kai. That's enough. Damn her. Then Miguel finally gets mad enough. I should be the one who's mad. You got me thinking I'm paranoid. I'm a paranoid asshole. And here you're on a date with Robbie. Sam says, it's not a date. Miguel's like, not a date. Yeah, I've heard that one before, which I didn't get that at first, but that's
a callback.
Yeah, to their first not a date.
Yeah. Well, and then you don't know her, or you didn't even know her, was also a callback to Sam saying the same to Miguel about Robbie.
Oh, yeah. Miguel's like, I just wanted to clear the air. I guess that's a lost cause. And he's right. It's a lost cause. He did try. And then Tori slams into Samantha. So, you know, as we've said, Tori, she's got some spunk. We like her, but she's can be pretty aggressive sometimes. And that was like a totally, you know, bad move, in my opinion. Pretty messed up.
She's the drama queen, man.
I feel like Robbie and Tori would make a better couple, and Miguel and Samantha, to be honest.
I don't know. Robbie's trying to be good. Tori might lead him down the bad path again.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay, number three, Richard.
Number three, you know, I was a little scared that Daniel was going to lose Amanda. That was a little upsetting. I had a little bit of fear that was going to happen. I think I'm going to flub this a little bit because I'm not really sure how I feel. I'm going to try and explain about Daniel. You know, the last episode 8 was kind of a lot about Daniel losing his balance in life, something he's been touting this, you know, for the last two seasons. And I didn't know if I understood or liked the message that this episode was giving us. I didn't like the effect that the message may have on future arcs and plot points. You know, I mean, what is the message here? It's to achieve balance in your life, right? You can't just be a jack of all trades, though. Because, like Jason just said, it's still a show about karate. I mean, you're going to do many things mediocre, or are you going to do one thing absolutely awesome? But then you can't really just do that, because then he would lose Amanda. So I'm like, where is this going? What's happening? Yeah, the best of the best, right? They dedicate every waking hour to achieving their goals, like the people that are doing the Olympics and such, professional sportsmen, you know, and sportswomen. They do one thing and they do it really, really well. There is really no balance. It's completely lopsided. And then Daniel, you know, he was turning those kids into little Miyagis, and then he had to take time away from that. So, you know, what's going to happen in the future with this? It's got to have some sort of effect, right? Little Does he Miyagi's. Want Miyagi-Do to be the best or what? And then meanwhile, Johnny's flirting with hot babes, and he, you know, where's his attention going?
And he's going off with his Cobra Kai friends. I mean, yeah, like I said, I identify with this. I mean, I've got two kids, you know, I got my whole family, I got my podcasting. I quit my job to pour as much time as I could into the podcasting. And I still, you know, it's like spinning plates keeping when you grow up and you become an adult, there's a lot of demands on your time and attention. And if you're going to satisfy everybody, it's a lot of hard work and it takes right. time. And so, for Daniel to be able to do that, I feel like if he can get Amanda to agree, maybe he could try taking a year off of the auto group and hiring more help and fucking charging his students at Miyagi-Do, you know, that might be a compromise.
Yeah. I'm hoping something will be resolved here, you know, or like so often they do, they just completely ignore it and move forward.
I know. Right. I don't know. Yeah. This show seems to be pretty good about following up on stuff like that so far, but we'll see. I don't remember the last two episodes, whether it was addressed.
Yeah.
It seems like it's going to have to be.
Those are my thoughts. You know, like Jason knows me really well. And I did have a little bit of lapse in attention when everyone was making out. So I started thinking down this dark path here.
That's hilarious. That makes total sense.
Okay, Rima.
Well, we kind of talked about it and it was really short moment. But just my big number one was Johnny's message to Allie. And I don't know what else we really need to say about it at this point, but I think it was just a really big moment. I do love how he misspelled his name when he was first writing it and had to kind of go back and fix his name. Thought that was
he cute. Types way too fast on that.
Yeah. Phone. On his yeah. Ericsson smartphone.
Yeah.
Yeah, my smartphone.
How does he type that? I can't type that fast.
I know for being someone who's pretty inept and who was not so long ago was using a flip phone. Wasn't he still using like one of those old, I don't even remember seeing him get that smartphone, but he was still using a flip phone not long ago. So he's got that texting thing and typing down pretty well. But it was funny because I totally related to that. You know, he's sitting there pondering, like sending that message. And when he gets bumped by that cute girl who, you know, offers to buy him a beer and that he really, well, he should have, I should say, hit it off with, but he was kind of not paying attention to her. When she bumped into him and it caused his thumb to move up and hit send. And it was like, oh shit, you know, because he wasn't quite
sure. Yeah, that was hilarious.
So I think we've all had that kind of moment. I think, you know, we've all had that moment like, uh-oh. Hit send too quick.
He doesn't know he could he can delete it.
I don't know, was that feature around at that time? I don't know
if they had maybe that not delete feature. And it would still say it would still message show up. Deleted so
yeah it would Allie still show would up
Johnny message deleted
yeah and that would probably almost be
but it was pretty benign. It was just like, hey, I was, you know, thought we could connect.
I got on Facebook on my smartphone and
on the Facebook
it's an app on my smartphone and thought we could connect.
Just explaining it to her. That's funny.
But I thought it was adorable. And again, like you were just like, dang, we talk about Allie so much on this show. Right. They bring her up all the time.
And
I feel this is like the big secret. I just feel like it has to happen. And it makes me really excited because I'm really interested to see if they do get her on the show. Even if it's for one episode, what that's going to look like.
Oh, I hope it's more, though.
I hope it's more, but you know how it goes.
Two or three, yeah.
Timing and
people's commitments. We'll be lucky to get any.
Yeah, I mean, if we get her at all, we'd be really lucky. So even if we just get one episode, I would want more, but I feel like we just have to have her and just kind of see that dynamic again to see how stuck these guys are still on her. I mean, damn. What's that girl got?
Only just once would cause a tsunami. Jeez.
I mean, she's been a big movie star in Cocktail with Tom Cruise and Leaving Las Vegas
with Nicolas Cage. Yeah. That was outstanding. Nicolas Cage.
But it's been a while. And, you know, recently we saw her on The Boys. Boys season one.
Yeah.
And she was great. But that's just another streaming TV show. You know, I think Cobra Kai is at least as popular as The Boys, so if she's going to do that, hopefully she would come back and do this. Come on, Elizabeth Shue.
Do it, Miss Shue.
Yeah. If anybody's listening that has absolutely any say, make it happen.
We miss you, Miss Shue. Okay. So my number one is Training for War. And what made these episodes better for me this time, that I don't think I was that focused on the first time, was a realization that Kreese has declared war here. And Daniel is getting his students ready for it. So that makes it feel like there's more purpose to these last several episodes than I realized. And there's the whole thing about Kreese considering his students as soldiers and they're in a war. And he says, war never ends. Peace is just the lull between battle. You better hope your students are ready because I promise you ours will be. So that's a declaration of war on Daniel. And he's like, what have I gotten these kids into? Which is a good question. Like, would they be better off if they just didn't take karate classes because now they're targets of this crazy dude and his students? But anyway, it was kind of dumb of Kreese to warn him too, by the way. But I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, they do that all the time.
So he, you know, Daniel, like, he decides the thing to do is to train him up so they're ready for whatever happens. And he's always says, you know, like, karate is about protecting and defending, but if you got to be ready when the fight comes to you. He said that a few times. So then we see this is like the two sides of the war training and the different training methods. And since Cobra Kai is more about dominating your enemy, they split them up into two groups and tell them that each group is the other's enemy. And they do that whole thing in the woods. What did you guys think about that sequence? We haven't really talked about it.
Yeah, it was fun to watch. They had some good action going on there.
Sure did.
A little bit of power dynamics, you know, kind of like a pecking order was being established at the same time.
Yeah. It was cool to see that Miguel and Hawk are like the two most badasses, and they fought, especially remembering where Hawk came from, that he was such a geek, but he's really got some formidable energy going on there. So I think it was cool to have those two fight. And I'm glad that Miguel won, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then just as quick, it was resolved the next day when he showed up at the dojo. He's all, hey, man, no hard feelings. He's like, no, that was cool.
Yeah. He's like, what did you say? We're enemies during
that. We were
enemies
for the day, but Cobra Kai
for life.
The end, or yeah, yeah. For life. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was just a nice moment, you know, which is good. It's so cool when the show doesn't necessarily make you hate anybody.
Yeah.
Even Hawk can have nice moments like
right.
that.
Right. I was like, yeah, that's he's walking the walk.
Yeah. It's cool. Then Miyagi-Do is their training is about adapting to harsh conditions, so, and defending. And so there's the Shoshu Gaiko Japanese tradition where you train during the hottest days of the year. We just had one of those, by the way. 100-degree weather.
109 here.
Right. Driving home, I drove through 112 at one point.
Ouch.
And then there's Kangaiko, which is the cold version of that. And that whole exercise of having one person in the middle where Daniel calls out the numbers and they attack, the focus is on the defender in the middle. So it's more about defense. And it was pretty cool, right? That whole where you'd say a number and there would be a slow-mo sequence of the person in the middle blocking.
Yeah. That the whole heat wave is a gift, though, that thing. That's a deal breaker for me. I could not be Miyagi.
I can't get down with that.
Kangaiko like that. is more my game.
Yeah, me too. Totally. But it's a good point that you need to, if you prepare yourself in super harsh conditions, it's like running with weights on your ankles or something, or putting a weight on your bat during bat.
It's like Rocky IV when he was working out in the barn and running through the snow.
Yeah.
I will break you.
And then Dimitri's getting the shit beat out of him as usual. And I was like, dude, maybe don't throw your hardest stuff at Dimitri. He's obviously a bit challenged and he's newer than the other guys. But that aside, I did like that he made it about his brain. He says, Dimitri, you're the most neurotic person that I know. And I thought, oh, Daniel's finally had enough. He's going to unload on this kid. But he goes, you always expect the worst, but you could use that to your advantage. It means you anticipate. Think of it as a spidey sense. It's not about who's fastest or strongest. It's about instincts. It's about using what's in here, and points to his brain. Just appealing to a kid like that about, oh, if you're smart enough, you can do it, is a good idea because he thinks he's so smart, you know, but also maybe there's some truth to it that he could actually build, you know, use his strengths to anticipate and stuff like that. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I can tell you, and it's very true with martial arts. Size doesn't matter.
So. It's a bit like chess in a way, right?
Yeah.
Like strategy. Is that kind of, I mean, if you are in the right place at the right time, then you can leverage that.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, there's strategy involved, definitely. But I mean, it's, you know, I'm not a big person. I'm tall, but I'm not a very big person. But I mean, you know, I've fought people bigger than me and stronger than me and, you know, been able to overcome them when we were sparring and things, you know, when we're learning. So you assume like, oh man, they're huge. They're going to take me down. But then you realize when you learn something that if you do it right and you're smart, then you can take them down and it doesn't matter how big that person is.
Right. Punching somebody in the balls, size doesn't really
It's matter. Not all just punching no, in the I'm balls, just kidding. I can no, promise no. you.
No, that's cool. Yeah, that's cool. What else? Nah, I don't need to talk about that. What about notes?
I thought it was funny when Moon was talking with Samantha in the room. I can't remember what she gave her. Did she give her something? And she said, oh, that's something to help you balance your kinetic energy.
It was like a hemp. Infused
gross
tea or something.
Smoothie or something.
Oh, was it?
Oh, yeah. Smoothie, yeah.
And I thought, yeah, I need something to balance my potential energy. All you're doing is sitting on the couch for the last couple of days because you can't go outside.
Yeah.
And then in the office, when Kreese pointed to the military picture hanging on the wall, he said, a buddy of mine took that picture. I wonder if he was referring to Terry Silver.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. And I forgot to say it. I had it in my notes, but when we were covering Karate Kid 3, I thought I would love to see Terry Silver in the series. He's just so crazy and over the top. It would be really fun. And now I'm kind of wondering if he's not going to be back in season 3, maybe.
Mm.
The one thing, and this is like, so like, I don't know that they do it on purpose or anything, because Miyagi was a World War II veteran, so I won't say that they portray veterans in a bad way, but like Kreese and Terry Silver, which I know he's not in Cobra Kai, but he was in Karate Kid, but Kreese and Terry Silver both coming from Vietnam, they're both total assholes. And I just feel like they just, I mean, I realize it's their characters and I don't think that they purposely mean it for all Vietnam veterans, but man, Vietnam veterans just get a bad rap in movies a lot of times. It's like those guys, when they came back, got so much shit, you know, and treated so badly. And then, you know, they get the stereotype that they're all just a bunch of assholes.
Yeah.
That bugs me.
It is. Yeah, I get that. It is a good point, though, that they also have Miyagi, who was in World War II, has this Medal of Honor, is an honorable person. So that could be sort of a counterpoint to that, you know. But yeah.
When Stingray made his debut, I was like, oh, for God's sakes, he had that stupid string hanging off his face. And then, but then I did chuckle a little bit when the music ran out on his introduction. And Johnny was just like, all right, let's get moving.
he goes, okay, Chubbs, let's get moving or whatever.
The dude tries so such hard. He tries so hard.
Yeah. I don't. He's not working for me. It's It just falls a little bit flat for me. Mm-hmm. Oh, but him popping up from under the leaves was kind of funny, I guess. But it kind of reminded me of that video we made, Rich.
Right. Yeah, that's right. That's how we started it. Huh? Did you guys notice his Internet for Dummy book was up on the shelf in the closet?
Yeah.
I think that was that his computer too that was up there? No, it couldn't have been his computer. It was sitting on top of something when Miguel was rooting through his closet looking for clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
You know, I thought that the soundtrack for these two episodes was pretty good. It's like the quintessential 80s soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Be pretty easy to piece together.
This episode sent me down a Chicago Peter Cetera rabbit hole. Today, for sure. It was bad. I mean, I think I mentioned before, probably when we were talking Karate Kid 2, because there was, you know, Glory of Love from that soundtrack, and that kind of brought it all back. And I thought, oh, yeah, man, I'm a sucker for Peter Cetera songs. It gets me every damn time, just takes me back. And it's there's the secret, guys, to if you want to, you know, if you meet me and you're interested, start playing some
If you
want to
rue Rima.
Guess
that's
all it takes.
Soundtrack, Anna.
Yeah, that's all it takes. So, yeah, it's definitely sent me down a Chicago Peter Cetera rabbit hole, jamming on.
They play
some of that
in the what do you call it? The limousine. He played, oh, You're the Inspiration. Mm-hmm. You're the Inspiration by Chicago. And I'm like, that, I feel like that was in a Karate Kid movie. I mean, we know Glory of Love was, but I searched You're the Inspiration Karate Kid and it's some pages came up, but nothing that definitively said. So
it
made me feel like other people thought it was in there too, but it's not. Yeah.
Like I said, man.
And then we had Whitesnake.
They all run together.
OMD,
yeah.
D and Wang Chung. And take all your pick. Guys, yeah.
Could be in any 80s movie.
Yep.
Rima, any notes?
One that we haven't already talked about because the music was a big part of it. But when Daniel had the kids in the meatpacking place, did you notice the name on like the boxes and the signs?
No.
Is it Fernandez Meats? The boxes were all labeled with Fernandez Meats.
Oh, is that his friend, Freddy Fernandez?
Yeah. So the stickers suggest that the factory is owned by Freddy Fernandez. And in the movie, in the original Karate Kid, he was the kid who met him there at the apartment building. He was wearing the Make and Bacon shirt when they moved in. And so it would appear he ended up in the bacon business.
So I guess they stayed friends then, even after he treated him like shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely ignored him.
That's awesome. No, I didn't know that. Yeah. That's really cool.
So I thought that was an interesting little tidbit there. I was like, that looks familiar. Mm. And I looked it up and I was like, oh, I think that's right. So other than the music and I think we've covered all my other notes. So that's all I have.
I only have one more. And it was when Johnny is beating up the guy who is dating Carmen in the alley. And he goes, never go near Carmen again. And he goes, whatever you say, I'll ghost her. And Johnny goes, yo, what? He goes, I'll leave her alone.
He's so stuck.
I just love that.
When he talks to Miguel about, you know, what happens when we don't move forward, you know, we get stuck. And I'm like, Johnny, you are like the one
trying now.
He's trying.
This whole series is Johnny in a cement.
He's slowly, yeah, as it's drying, trying to
cement
move forward.
Cement galoshes.
Yeah.
All right. Nice. Let's take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us. Okay, we're back. It's time for some listener feedback. Not a lot of feedback this week, but we got one message and one call.
Jason Robertson writes, it's been a while since I've seen the episodes, so I'm fuzzy on the details, but I love all of your coverage of the series. It always jogs my memory of the episodes listening to y'all. My kids didn't know who Don Johnson was either, just like Robbie didn't. Yeah, that was a bygone generation.
I actually didn't really watch Miami Vice much, but you could not escape that image of him with his Dayglo t-shirts and suit jackets and everything.
I still remember him from Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man.
Oh, hell yeah.
That was a cool movie, huh?
Love Don Johnson.
And we got our weekly call with Steve Brown.
Hello, House Podcastica. This is Steve. This is for Cobra Kai Season 2, Episodes 7 and 8, Lull and Glory of Love. A couple of good episodes. I think they went well together. You know, it was starting. I'm still leaning towards liking. You know, I can't do it. I wish I could. He said he hates the Patriots. You know, I can't with this guy, Johnny. You know, but anyway, besides that quote, you know, it was interesting, watching the whole scene in the woods, counterpointed with the Daniel training his students in the cold and the heat. I thought it was kind of an interesting, very good juxtaposition there of that, loved stingray coming out from the ground, to attack Miguel. I do know, or I assume that, the whole Medal of Honor thing, that's going to come back to bite Robbie in the butt, I'm sure. Because that was just wrong. Why? Just admit, just tell her the truth. Be honest, man. hey, Miguel came over, he returned the medal. He said he's sorry. Boom, you're done. You know, and then that little tussle in the skating rink between Tori and Sam. This is definitely going to be going to come to a head, I'm sure, between the two of them. We're going to get to see a fight. And then absolutely loved Daniel trying to mend his relationship with his wife and seeing the flashback where they were in the car before Sam was born and Glory of Love is playing. And then they flash to the present and it moves right into You're the Inspiration. You know, okay, it's Peter Cetera solo in Chicago, but we can forgive it. All right. Can't wait to hear you guys' thoughts. Talk to you later.
About Robbie, it's like, yeah, but honesty can be pretty boring. So that's why.
That was funny when Daniel in the back of the car said that when their first child was to be born, he was like, uh-uh, I claimed that child. The next one was yours. It was like, Anthony, he sucks. Good call, Daniel.
I haven't missed
Has
him
there
at all.
Even been any Anthony this season at all?
I haven't seen him in a while.
Unless it was really early, like the first couple of episodes.
I don't even know if he's been in it at all.
Because it was a while when we podcasted on 1 and 2. So I don't remember.
I wonder if they'll ever do it like a time jump or anything on the show.
And he's not a little annoying brat.
Yeah. All right. That is our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to write to us or record a message and send it in, you can email us at waxonwaxoff@podcastica.com.
We also put up a post for each week's episode on our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
And be sure to check out the other great podcasts at podcastica.com.
Yeah, this Monday, we're going to record an episode of Walking Dead Cast just about all this crazy news that's come out about the show ending and a bunch of spinoffs and all that stuff. So you need to focus on that.
You know what? You got to start preparing for your best of show.
Yeah, we were thinking maybe once once Walking Dead finally ends that we'll just do a full series rewatch. But it'll be, you know, with spoilers so we can talk about how things panned out storyline-wise and stuff like that.
And then
we might do that.
And then some of your best moments.
Yeah,
from the podcast.
I mean, we're on episode like 404, and so sometimes I've thought about going back and pulling clips. We actually did for our 10th anniversary that we had recently, but man, there's so much content there. Like, it would be really hard to really go through and figure out what the best ones were, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you guys have been hella productive.
I just kind of dipped into random ones. I'm like, oh, that'll be fun. Play different clips and stuff. That was cool. Anyway, next episode of this podcast, we'll be wrapping up Cobra Kai as it stands right now, season 2, episodes 9 and 10, Pulpo and No Mercy. So I'm looking forward to that. And then hoping that season 3 comes out as soon as possible in 2021.
Hopefully like
January 1st. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
You know what, guys? I feel like we did this for the glory of love.